the comic book now owns pop culture, and that's a worldwide phenomenon. Film, television, literature, even music. These days, it's all about the comics.
I am Arrow.
I'm Batman.
Supergirl?
What does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand for, Agent Ward?
I am Iron Man.
And I am Spider-Man.
Hulk. Smash.
We're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
By the red sun of Krypton, you are listening to Breaking the Panel. Coming up on today's show, The Force Awakens, and we talk about it. There are black people and women in that trailer. I don't know if you know this, but there are people who want to boycott the trailer because of that. Also, Fox and Friends, well, they don't like Captain America. All this and a whole lot of smash and kapow on this episode of Breaking the Panel.
So, this is a politically charged episode this week.
That's right.
For sure. And I never thought we'd do a geek comic show where we had to mention the words Fox and Friends. That actually pains me a little
or
bit.
Or Trump, for that matter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll get to all that.
Happy part.
Well, we'll do. Yeah, of course. Let's introduce ourselves. I'm Brian Ibbett. Hi, how you doing? your podcasting buddy, Brian Ibbett.
Hey there.
With the filling out the magical. What was that? I didn't hear that.
Oh, hey there.
Hey there.
How you doing?
Filling out the magical tripod of podcasting here. Only that, putting the tripod in podcasting.
Nice.
Joined always, as always, by Charles McFall.
Hello, Rock Gotta Podcasting here. Checking in.
And Paul Klotz.
Yo!
There we go. All right, guys. So we saw the Force Awakens trailer. The three of us even watched it again just to kind of get it fresh in our minds. And let's talk about it. First off, kind of on a general sense, what kinds of things were you hoping to see in the full-on Star Wars trailer? And did you see them? Did you end up seeing them?
Yes, I was hoping to see motion and lights and colors, and I got all of that. I was really
you were hoping there weren't going to be a bunch of black and white still images of good.
Okay, so I don't expect anything. So the teaser trailers have been amazingly mind-blowing, and this dropped today, and you guys had me watch it, and I'm glad my mic was off, because for the first time ever, I've never been this excited about something. I'm watching it, and it just builds and builds. About halfway through, I couldn't help myself. I was like,
No, your microphone
so
was
cool.
on.
Your oh, you heard me.
Was on, and we heard you go, oh.
It was so like, oh, my God. You know, when it gets to the point Sweet. Where she talks about, I've heard stories, and Han Solo goes, they're all true.
They're all true. They're all,
I was like, oh, my God.
I'm a believer now.
I'm like, what before. Stories? What stories? Tell me the stories. I want to know the stories.
So, what about you, Klotz? Was there anything you were hoping for and got? Or
I really was digging the fleshed out starfighter battles. Like they showed, they had the little Falcon chase scene, and then they had some X-wings and hot X-wing on TIE fighter action. That gets that gets me there, man. That gets me right there.
This is what we're talking about. We say full frontal nerdity.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, as a kid, I was blown away by the graphics. I just could not imagine anything in TV ever or in life looking like that. And it blew me away as a kid. And the second set, which is 1, 2, 3, the second set didn't achieve that for me because I was familiar with graphics and how that stuff worked. This, I'm watching this and I'm back to that kid mode of, oh my God, look at that TIE fighter, the flames and and everything in the sand. I know it's real sand, but for crying out loud, it looks amazing.
All right, just to clarify for people at home, when Charles says graphics, he means special effects. And when he says the second set, he means the prequel trilogy.
Yeah, I thought it was fairly inferred.
The second
that
set.
Lesso set.
Yeah, the second set.
Yeah, it's in whatever.
Because, the thing about the prequels is they came out at a time where technology had gotten to that point where we could start doing that stuff, but it wasn't polished yet. So, like, I go back and I watch those and I'm like, I remember how good it was at the time, but it doesn't hold up. This film, like, the thing about this is as much as the original Star Wars, like, the practical effects and what they added in after looked real, this looks real, you know, mm-hmm. like there's not a yes. lot of CG in this that I'm like, I can't see that being a real thing because it all looks so good, which is why the Starfighter battle was so big for me, because I love those moments. When I watch a film like that, I'm reminded of one of the most intense ones I ever saw was Avatar. In Avatar, when they were having the crazy in-air battle where they've got the, you know, the fighters and everything, and they've got all the creatures, and they're just, it's in this insane battle. I actually get adrenaline dumps from that stuff because I allow myself to be pulled into it. But it has to look good, because if it looks bad, I'm just like, oh, there's just some stuff happening. But seeing those starfighters, I'm just like, I immediately did an R2 whoop. I was like, wow! Yes. Nice. But to touch back a little bit, the other cool thing I thought was seeing the main female lead there spelunking into the destroyed Star Destroyer. I was like, that is such a cool idea. Like,
and it's that same angle that we saw when the Emperor was arriving, you know, with those two big ports sitting in the middle of the floor that were covered by Imperial guards. And it was just so cool to see that, like, decimated and destroyed by time. Yeah.
So
really cool.
But Ibbet, we haven't heard what you hope to see and what you got out of it.
You know what? It's really cool. I was hoping to see something that obviously would whet my appetite for the movie, but not give me so much that I had a loose idea of what the plot was going to be for this thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's going to be a, hey, there are good guys. Oh no, there are bad guys. Let's see if we can get the good guys to stop the bad guys. You know, that's kind of a given for these things. But as far as a plot, there's no giving anything away. I mean, we're getting a bunch of character shots and very generic voiceover work and that sort of thing. We know that Rey and Finn are going to meet Han and Chewie, and that they're, you know, wondering about what the stories of the original trilogy, and if that stuff really happened, like the legends foretold and stuff like that. And now you've got Han Solo as a believer in the Force when, you know, he was originally like, yeah, like there's some guiding force, you know, telling me and controlling my life and all that stuff. Really cool to see. The Luke stuff is very, you know, very much,
not there,
hidden. Yeah. And, it could mean one of two things, and I talked a little bit about this on the morning stream this morning. My opinion is, you know, maybe we're going to get a much more scaled back role by Mark Hamill in this thing. Like, he's going to be in a few very important scenes, but maybe we won't see him as much as we see Han Solo or Chewbacca and Princess Leia. But the other possibility is there's something that just in seeing Mark Hamill would be a spoiler to something bigger. And so they're holding off on that reveal until the movie. And either one of those, you know, I think is viable. Yeah. And I'm not complaining about either direction if that's the case.
So my roommate is pretty much the biggest Star Wars fan on the planet. Mm-hmm. So he's been reading the comic books that tie in. He's been reading the novels that have come out. All this stuff. We're talking, he's primed. He's ready.
Wow.
And we were talking about it a little bit, and apparently what is supposed to be happening is that Luke kind of went into hiding, kind of like Yoda did. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if this could be way off. I mean, this is just speculation, and this is just based on, like, tidbits of stuff that they've been throwing out there through the various things that are all tied in. So it's now his motive for that. I've seen some speculation. The one that I thought resonated really well was that he disappeared so that he could help bring balance to the Force by not trying to influence things that were going on, you know, because that's a big part of, like, what's going on in the original trilogy, is that because most of the Jedi and most of the Sith have been eradicated, you know, the Force is in flux and whatnot, and, you know, everything's crazy. So hopefully it's something along those lines. And I think now people have said that he's definitely on the casting listing for the second film.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay. So that's kind of a big hint in and of itself that,
and some people have said, you know, there's always the Force ghost thing. Like, he could just show up as, you know, his spiritual self, but
the trickster kind of just shows up in the background and moves along.
Right. The Joker too. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But I really do think what's going to happen is he's going to come in the probably late second act kind of thing. They're going to build up to it, and he's going to be a big part of the third act, and then he's going to be a main part of the story going forward, probably guiding, you know, these two main characters. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's my speculation. That's my guess. But I am really excited to see what they do with this, because I'm loving everything about it. Like, I'm loving the look of everything. I'm loving the vibe. Everything looks like it's in, all the pieces are in the right place. I don't see a pod racer, so I'm pretty sure I'm not going to hate this film.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, if you guys have more thoughts, please jump in. But yeah, I'm like, I am super stoked right now.
Yeah, the one thing I think we do see that actually could be something else was that brief scene with, I believe, R2. It goes by so fast, but mm-hmm. it's a hooded, cloaked figure, and the metal hand comes out. It touches R2.
And what we've seen, we saw that in one of the first teasers, is that is Luke. You know, obviously the missing hand, the hooded figure seems to match up with on-location shots that have gotten leaked. So... And again, that shot in the first teaser was when the Force is strong in my family. I have it, and you see him patting R2 on the head, so to speak. So that presumably is the same thing.
Yeah.
I just had my doorbell just rang. I don't know if you could hear that.
I heard that.
Talk amongst yourselves. I gotta grab that. One sec.
The Force is strong with that doorbell.
Right.
So, you know, but then just. The one other thing that really stood out to me, besides the music and the sound effects and air, as a trailer, man, it just sucks you in. The whole package is just there. I can't wait for the movie.
It's this ultimate tease, and it gives nothing away. You know what I mean?
That's what a trailer should be.
Right. Oh, I completely agree. Nothing drives me crazier than seeing a trailer for a movie being like, that looks great, and then being like, but I'm pretty sure you just showed me all the best scenes.
Yeah. Or,
you know what I mean?
Or worse, I remember Titan A.E. There's this scene, it's an animated film from the 90s. And in the trailer, I remember the scene where he's like jumping through space and doing something weird. And they're playing the Creed song. I think it's Creed. I think it's Arms Wide Open. And it whatever it was, it really fit with the scene, and it, as a trailer, it just grabbed me. And you get to the movie, and I don't know if it's licensing, I have no idea what happened with this and why, but the song's not in that scene in the movie, and it took me out of the movie at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got back into it later. It's actually a really good animated film, and I really enjoyed it. It's one of my first non-kid-oriented animated films that I've ever
seen.
That
was a huge groundbreaker for that kind of film, too,
Yeah, it was great. But the fact that it hooked me in and the song fit the scene perfectly, because I'm a big music balance guy. The score or the right pop song or the right rock song, the right song at the right time really puts you one step ahead in my book. Mm-hmm. And that song was there. So we know the scores are done by John Williams, and the sound effects are... I don't know who does the sound effects, but they were perfect in the film. But the last thing that stood out was that one of the last scenes in the trailer is I have yet to learn anybody's name in this thing. I don't know any of the characters. I haven't done any deep research because I'm one of these guys that just wants to shut it out until it arrives. You know, for the most part, I watch the trailers, but I don't go reading the comics. I don't go looking up the character names.
Mm-hmm.
But the black guy, he's in the winter. Okay, is that Finn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Finn.
So hopefully he'll rescue Tangled and we'll be all good. But come on, it's Disney. And there's something I'm going to bitch about in a second. But it's snowing. It's that field, the trees of snow and all that. And he has the lightsaber out. And then you see the badass lightsaber, right? You know, it's one of the big bad guys. But it's the instant fear in his face. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, you are.
People are really amazing. Talking about how insanely intense that moment feels. And the hope is, and I'm with people who feel this way, the hope is that we're not getting prequel, like, dance fighting, which at the time we thought was pretty good. But, like, movies have come such a long way in the last 15 years that, like, now it's kind of like, no, that was kind of cheesy, man. Like, the original trilogy for its time was so ahead of everything else, you know, doing anything like that, that even though but even in the original trilogy, like, as I always think of the fight from the third film when they face off, and how intense that fight is, even though it's old school like stage fighting. You know what I mean?
Darth and Luke and going through.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They still built it up, and so this has that
Earl
kind of
Flynn,
feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has that desperation, that frustration. Clearly, he's about to be overmatched, and so people are speculating that we're going to see some real brutal lightsaber fighting.
I cannot remember the choreographer who did it, but late 90s, early 2000s is a movie called The Musketeers, and it was done with a kung fu director master. You know, he was well recognized in Eurasia for his kung fu movies, and he brought that to this French tale of musketeers. Gotta say, best musketeer movie ever. I mean, the dancing on the barrels and the sword fighting on the sides of the buildings with ropes. And
yep,
I want
that.
The
tower scene. Yeah, yeah. Well, that was good. See, and if it warrants something like that, like a scene or two, that would be great too. But like when we're talking the bad guy, good guy, we're squaring off. We both got these laser swords. We're going to throw down. I don't want to see like... you know, this dance fighting kind of thing. I want to see the Sith reach into his anger and just go after this kid. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I want to see Finn doing everything in his power to defend himself and just survive.
Yeah,
because that's how it should be. It's predator and prey at that point.
Yes.
This kid is not ready for this. You know what I mean? He stepped into a whole world of hurt. You know what I mean? So it's going to be pretty awesome. I hope, like I really do, but and I think it will be. I keep going back to the last two Star Trek films, both of the Abrams ones.
Yeah.
And how they found a way to do all the action in a really modern way, took a lot of the cheese out, kept the suspense high. It's relatively realistic. I mean, like, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch's initial gun combat scene in the second film is kind of crazy, but it was really well done.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, this is Star Trek? What?
Yes.
I'm like, this doesn't happen on Star Trek. We're not doing... So I'm hoping we get more of that. I think we will. I think we're going to have some really, really awesome... fights. I think we'll probably see like the more jump cut style type stuff rather than the big drawn out, you know. I don't know how to describe the prequel fighting other than that it's ostentatious after a while. You know, those fights went on a little too long and everything. Mm-hmm. My favorite part from the prequels, I tell people this all the time, that my favorite lightsaber fight in the whole thing is, you know, the Duel of the Fates in the first film when it's, you know, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon against Darth Maul, and when the shielding goes up, when they're going through that one corridor with the multiple shields,
and they have to one waits on the other.
Exactly, they have to wait, and you get to see the Jedi try to collect himself, and you see Darth Maul just pace like a predator waiting to eat his meal,
just waiting. Yeah,
I want to see stuff like that. I want to see really, you know, I want to see visual storytelling that tells the whole story in those moments. You know what I mean? And I don't want to see cheesy dialogue and stuff like that. Oh, I'm the baddest Sith of the, you know what I mean? I want to see like,
I will crush you.
No. I don't have to talk to you because you're so beneath me. It won't matter. I'm hoping that's what we get. So I'm excited.
So the one thing I'm mad about, not for Star Wars, but for the rest of Marvel,
is it all those black people and females in the movie?
It's absolutely not. In Marvel, it's the cutting off of a hand in every phase to be tribute to like. I love Star Wars. You can tell by the way I'm talking. I love Star Wars. Much like many geeks of my generation and those beyond the generation. Our whole world was changed by that movie and those stories. It's the whole package. But do we really have to cut off somebody's hand in every Marvel movie? I'm just saying, you know, that seems a little cheesetastic to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
No, I agree. It does seem kind of silly, and it seems like a silly thing, you know, doing in one movie to pay an homage is one thing, but doing it in every movie does seem like, all right, we don't need to do that.
I can't remember if it's every movie or every phase. But I think it's something along those lines. I'm like, I mean, it made sense when it happened to Coulson in the end of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 2.
Spoilers. Sorry, it's been more than two weeks.
You're right. Still, some people had cut off. I apologize. But when it happens to somebody somewhere in some show, it made sense until they came out afterwards and announced that they were doing that on purpose. Like, you kind of honestly just took that moment away from me.
Well, it's a big thing to do to a character to just pay homage to Star Wars, right?
Right. I mean,
it's like, we love Star Wars. Let's dismember
There's been a lot of dialogue about it, too, in the show.
Yeah.
And I'm getting to the point where I'm like, can you stop flipping talking about this?
Right.
Like, can you stop cracking jokes about your missing hand every 5 minutes?
Yeah.
You know, Agent Coulson? Because, like, this is crazy.
You know, when every commercial break, he has to be coming back in, putting his hand on or something. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a little... Okay, honest to God, no pun intended. It's a little heavy-handed on the fan puns. Yeah, look, if we're going to make Star Wars references, why don't we make some C-3PO jokes about Deathlok? Or why don't we have Sky be a slave Leia for a Halloween episode or something?
Whoa, 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 dude, no.
Are you saying you would not tune in for that?
No comment. I'm saying that you can't ask for those things in the current social climate, okay?
I'm not actually asking for them. I'm just saying, if you're going to spread the love, don't just do the head cutting off thing.
But how cool would it be if, like, they had a scene where they go into, like, a bar for some reason to, like, talk to somebody, and over in the corner you see a couple of jazz musicians playing their instruments, and they're all, like, bald or something?
Yes.
A very subtle, like...
That would fit in Guardians somewhere.
Right, that's a way to pay homage to something.
Yeah.
Is little hints like that, not big, sweeping, massive changes to characters.
Hide an Ewok in every single film. In some crowd scene somewhere, there's... You know, there's ways to do this if you want to really be, story changing.
How about this?
Effects.
Don't make it the same thing in every phase. Give us something new to be like, oh my God, that's great. That's got to be the homage to Star Wars.
Yeah.
If we know they're going to do it, we'll do something different each time instead of like, oh great, this is the one where Captain Marvel loses a hand. You know,
so they can
keep with tradition.
I withhold myself from any membership to fanboydom at all. The people I know who are fanboys, Dragon Con. You know, we love Dragon Con.
Mm-hmm, of course.
But there's what we do at Dragon Con, and there's what we appreciate at Dragon Con, and there's that whole level of crazy at Dragon Con. So I kind of withhold myself from any kind of fanboydom because of that level of crazy.
Sure, sure.
And with Star Wars coming out, I'm like, I'm excited. Okay, after seeing this trailer... I'm like, okay, I gotta go see this movie. This is gonna be more than a movie. It's gonna be so epic and amazing. It's the first thing I've been this excited for in a long time. Because the Marvel movies I'm excited for, I know they're coming, and I know there's been a long time coming. But this was never supposed to happen. Literally.
Right.
This was never supposed to happen.
Well, okay, hold on. Okay. Because very originally, and there's been documented proof of this, in a Starlog magazine interview, George Lucas said his initial plan was that there were going to be 9 movies.
Right.
And the only characters that would be central to all of them would be C-3PO and R2-D2. So when he initially described this in an interview, and it was after Star Wars, which later became Episode 4,
came out,
he said he was planning on a 9.
Right. No, so I knew about the 9 set run.
Right.
However,
then he
came out
that
at
and
some
said,
point.
No, I'm,
yes.
What's, yeah.
Go ahead. You know, you got to tell it.
Yeah, yeah. Then he attracted that and said, no, I only really ever envisioned 6 movies, and that's all there will ever be. And I'm going to retool them. I'm going to, make them up to date with technology and special effects. But these are the 6 Star Wars movies you're going to get. Enjoy them and share them with your kids and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I believe, and I may be mistaken on this, but I believe at some point there was an over my dead body statement about the last
really?
Three. Maybe not quite that adamant, but there was a clamor, especially after the first 3 were released, or rumors, I guess, were starting about when he's going to make new movies. And then one of the last 3, we found out we're not getting 7, 8, 9. We were getting 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, 3 came out. I don't remember exact time frame, but there was a lot of fan clamor going, give us the finality. And to no end, he basically, George Lucas being he, said, nope, it's never going to happen. I just don't have it in me. Never going to, essentially, not over my dead body. And I immediately, I think it was 18 at the time when this all came out, and between 18 and 22. And my instant mindset was, well, you know what? When you die, old man, your kids will sell off the rights, and then we'll get what we want. And fortunately for George Lucas, he did not have to die for that to happen. So,
nice. Thank goodness, right?
Otherwise, the dark side would have been strong in this one. Because this is going to be epic. Finishing up the stories on, and I dare say, we might get a 10, 11, 12 if this goes well. I mean, all aspects of it go well.
I don't know if we'll get 10, 11, 12. I think they'll probably break from that because they're doing the side movies. You know, we're getting
Rogue One and the Boba Fett.
I think it's going to be, we're going to finish with another trilogy because it kind of fits the whole thing. And then we're going to just do, you know, keep doing our TV shows, keep doing the occasional film here and there. And that's what we'll hype for.
Okay.
I think if you try to go beyond 9 films, I think you're, as being like the main saga, I think you're asking too much.
But what you're saying is still do the universe and.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good enough for me.
Well, the cool thing is they're not saying anything definitive either way. They're not saying, no, there are only going to be 3 more traditional Star Wars movies, or, oh yeah, we're doing like, we think we can do these indefinitely. They're saying, hey, we're going to do these one at a time. You know, you're going to hear about casting and plans and scripts and treatments that we do for the next one, the next couple ones. But they're not saying, here's a guarantee that you're going to get 6 more movies out of this, or here's a guarantee that there will only be 3 more movies. I like the fact that it's open-ended like that. And if they continue to do well, if they continue to make money, yeah, of course they're going to keep doing them. So that's the way it should be.
I agree. So inevitably, at some point in some chain, you bring in another big name. And I'm specifically thinking about Fast and Furious and how they brought in The Rock. So if Dwayne The Rock Johnson comes to Star Wars, what character is he going to be?
he's going to kind of take on the new vacancy scoundrel role that Harrison Ford is just going to say, I'm too old to keep doing this.
Okay.
And he's going to kind of step in as another, dude, maybe another Corellian freighter pilot or something. Who knows?
And I've been watching another smuggler. Harrison Ford since American Pie. Okay, not American Pie, American
Ninja.
No, dang it.
Graffiti,
thank you. You knew what it was. Yes.
I was trying to get it. I was like, oh, Beauty. I was trying to remember some other ones I could have thrown in there.
American Graffiti.
Horror Story.
Where is she? Can you see Harrison Ford in American Pie? What are you doing, son?
Chewing son, I think we're going to need to keep the baked goods out of the house. I've heard the stories, and they're all true.
that docking port's for R2-D2, not your... Never mind. anyway, the American Graffiti, where he was a young man, and great movie. I can't help, after watching Chris Pratt, seeing some of that same caliber early on. And I don't know if he'll ever develop into a full-blown Harrison Ford caliber, because the man really developed his chops and has played all kind of roles, and is amazing. I've watched so many stupid chick flicks just because Harrison Ford was in them.
Oh, you enjoy watching Harrison Ford play Harrison Ford?
Yeah, pretty much. He's one of the last badasses, Griffith, right?
Working Girl, you enjoyed that one? Mm. 6 Days, 7 Nights with Anne Heche?
I didn't say I enjoyed it. I said I watched it. Okay? And actually, that 6 Days, 7 Nights was okay compared to some of the others. Anyway, that's not the point. I'm wondering if Chris Pratt, you won't be the next... you know, caliber of actor. And then when you start, as soon as you said Harrison Ford is going to hand off the Millennium Falcon, basically somebody went, give it to Star-Lord. You have to bring him in as the next scoundrel. I mean, that would be amazing.
That's just not going to happen. I'm going to say that right now because of his involvement with the Marvel stuff, and it's all in-house anyways, you know? Mm-hmm. Somebody at Disney is going to say, no, that would be silly.
And they would be wrong, and you're fired.
Well, but here's the thing. Like, if you think about it from a business perspective, if something happens to Chris Pratt and his public image goes south, or he gets hurt, or like any number of horrible things,
sure,
and you have him tied into both of your major, you know, multiverses, you have a huge problem on your hands. It's better to leave him in one and let him grow from there. But I do think that he's a shoo-in for like an Indiana Jones type thing.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's calling for it because he basically, his Star-Lord is space Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like it. He acts like it. Let's do it.
Let's kick him off fresh. Separate him from franchises. Let him have his own. Let's let him be Drake in Uncharted. the movie.
Well, that's still a franchise, but it's...
Well, it's a new new movie franchise. Yes, it's a franchise, but give him a new movie franchise.
And and Drake needs to be Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I don't know that they'll make it in time for Nathan to fill the role.
You never know.
You never know. God. See, yeah, that's another one, Nathan.
He's not a young man.
No, but he's younger than Harrison Ford. And Harrison Ford, he's younger than Harrison Ford's age when he did Crystal Skull. So there's precedent
for
this.
What is Crystal Skull? What are you talking about?
Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. I know a lot of us want to make ourselves believe that that didn't exist.
They tried too hard. There were some great Indiana Jones moments in that. They just tried too hard.
No. Wait. Are you talking about that thing where Shia LaBeouf is like like swinging from tree to tree at run speed?
That's another actor I don't effing get at all. Why do people like him? I don't know.
He's a good actor in the right role in the right film. He's a lunatic in real life. He's openly admitted that in interviews. He's like, I have problems. He's like, I can't control myself sometimes. You know, he's like, he just does weird things. And but he's a smart guy, and he is an incredible actor. He was awesome in Fury, that being the tank film.
Yeah, Brad Pitt. I've been wanting to see it, and Sheila's kind of holding me back on that.
Yeah.
But you say he's awesome, huh, in that movie?
He was really good in that film. Like, I was really surprised. He's come a long way since Transformers, since Indiana Jones, since, you know, like... Because the problem was he assumed a certain persona when he was in his early 20s, and that's what they were throwing into the films. You know what I mean?
Right.
But now that he's grown into an adult, a man, like, and I mean that, like, the roles he plays now, he comes across as an adult. He just has this deeper thing going on. He was amazing in Fury. I can't speak highly enough of it. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised because...
Yeah, I would agree.
He got a few moments to really shine, and he nailed it. And I mean, the movie's mostly Brad Pitt, but there
as
was some.
It should be.
Oh yeah, you know, if you pay the big bucks, you got to get the good stuff. So, but yeah, no, I would give him a second chance. I would check out Fury. That was a good movie. There were a couple logical inconsistencies in that film that frustrated me and all my engineering friends, but because I have a couple of friends they're both engineers and they're really into tanks, and my roommate's really into tanks as well. They've played World of Tanks like a lot and done a lot of research, and like my roommate has watched dozens of hours of videos about going into like how all the different tanks were, you know, how they operated.
He should watch Tank Girl. That's an amazing documentary.
That's an amazing piece of 90s Americana, man.
Yeah, it's so cheesy. But, it's awesome.
You can't talk bad about Tank Girl. Come on.
Oh no, best line ever. I don't want to quote it because it's wrong, but she makes a joke about molestation that cracked me up. That was just horrible.
Jeez, really?
It really was. It was really bad.
You are like a magnet.
I'm twisted, dude. I am.
You are
one of the funniest jokes ever made about molestation.
It was. Because people don't like... never mind.
Yeah, you know what? I take that back. Because there is a line in Fight Club like that that always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
And I think we all know the one. And if we don't, IMDb quotes, you'll find it there. It's spoken by Marla.
Yes.
Yeah. Moving on.
Now done with the fun stuff. Now we have to dive into the real world stuff that affects us.
Our excitement about episode 7 notwithstanding, there is some drama afoot. There is apparently a bit of a movement to boycott Star Wars because of the way it features prominent African American and female characters.
See, I thought this was an ironic statement when I saw this posted. Like, everybody's boycotting something, so I thought somebody was being ironic that, oh, you're boycotting Star Wars because of African Americans and females. I'm like, yeah, haha, you're making fun of us. No, this is real.
This is real.
God.
When in doubt, there are people who are really that stupid. Now, I find this particularly funny because, you know, around a year or so ago, there was a bunch of drama about the casting decisions for Star Wars Episode 7, where people who had, you know, a social agenda didn't feel that the casting that had been announced at the big announcement was diverse enough. So I've decided that you literally just can't win. Like, if you cast, you know, if you diversify your casting, you will get boycotted by racists.
Right.
And if you aren't diverse enough, or if you are pretty diverse, but not diverse enough by some people's standards, yeah. Social justice warriors will leave their Tumblr accounts and come out to tell you how wrong you are.
It comes down to, you're never going to be able to please everybody. And the best thing to do is do the right thing and let the people who complain about it be wrong, and just let them be wrong.
Yeah.
It's a mess. But yeah, there are people pushing for this. It's stupid. Yeah, I don't know. There's some, and I see in our notes here, there's some talk of them being mostly Trump supporters. I don't know if that's substantiated, but I'm not surprised.
No, that's a conjecture probably from the Daily Beast. But the so the hashtag was boycott Star Wars 7 and trended all day yesterday when the trailer was released. It's funny. I mean, it's funny that something that is as out of the political realm as a sci-fi movie can be pulled in and used on somebody's agenda to say, look, it's a black person and there's all these white stormtroopers and they're the bad guys. They're the white people are the bad guys and the good guy's the black guy.
By the way, have you ever read history? That's kind of how it goes down. Right. So, sorry.
Oh, well, don't bring up truth, Charles. That's right. Not fair.
Politics is no place for truth. Come on.
We have no room for your facts here. Well, it's funny you say that, Brian, because that leads into our next topic as well.
Right.
Where there is further drama from our friends, not really, over at Fox and Friends.
See, that's irony. The other hashtag is not. That is irony.
That it's Fox and Friends.
Yeah. Fox and Friends had a segment where they discussed how the new Captain America, who is Captain Falcon, he's colloquially known, Captain America hates conservatives. And one of their resident airheads claims to be a bit of a comic expert.
Oh, yeah. And before you get to that, they introduced him as our comic expert. I went, no. Nobody who's a comic expert puts on a freaking purple tie with a blue suit, jackass. We know how to match colors because that's all we ever look at.
Wait. Are you saying that Green Goblin's costume matches? I'm
just saying
Banner
he's a jackass.
Picked out don't those purple deal. Pants because they thought they would go really well with his green skin? Are you saying that?
I'm just saying this guy was no expert, sir. Okay. I just want to say jackass
Brian,
one more time.
Do you have a problem with green and purple being paired together? you were very oddly specific there.
I know. Well, those two, I mean, it's like those two colors that if I were to walk out of the house wearing green and purple, like a green shirt and purple pants, my wife would yank me back by the leash and make me change.
But if you buffed up and just wore the purple pants and painted yourself green, you'd get to sign autographs.
I'm sure, yes. Yes. And I'd get to hang out with Scarlett Johansson, apparently.
See, everything has a downside.
Well, to finish our thought here,
sorry.
Basically, Fox and Friends had this segment where they called out the fact that Captain America's most recent villain is essentially a conservative who is opposed to the unmitigated immigration into America. And so they just... You know, my cat is meowing in the background. I apologize.
Hey, the cat feels the pain. We all are meowing on the
either
inside.
Either that or
this.
The cat is, liberal Tommy Pinko.
So anyways, there's not much more to say other than the fact that they're like, oh, that resembles us. Damn it, Captain America hates us. And I'm like... Well, yeah, everybody hates you.
They contradicted themselves so many times. My brain did backflips on this one. I forced my way through it just to be prepared for the show. But they open up and say, well, you know, comic books have been struggling to get readership because, you know, everybody's going to see these Marvel movies. So comics are struggling. I'm like, do you not understand the movies are based off the comics and they tie together and comics are doing better than ever, sir? You can't say comic books are struggling and then in the same breath say, but everybody's going to see these movies are huge blockbusters.
The physical medium might be suffering.
Maybe.
But that's just a result of the digital age. But people are consuming comics and comic content at greater levels than ever before. I mean, this is literally the golden age. I mean, I imagine that this industry has to implode at some point. People are going to look back and be like, do you remember the mid 2010s when like everything was comic books?
Yeah,
like TV, movies, everything was comic books. It's going to happen.
There were podcasts about it, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah, those hideous. You remember podcasts? A bunch of blowhards just yapping.
But now, you know, GTSU launched Skynet, and we work for them.
Or GST.
See, I do that wrong every time. Thank you, Cots. I appreciate you.
Anyway, so we wanted to mention this. Captain America doesn't hate conservatives. He's a conservative guy. But as some of the articles I've read have pointed out, he's always had a liberal side where he's about the people.
Yes.
And the big thing in Civil War was that he wasn't protecting the institution. He was protecting the people. That's what it really came down to. It wasn't about the institution and the laws of the nation and, you know, of world governments. It was about the people themselves. He initially supported registration because he thought it was for the betterment of all people. And then he realized the evils of that implementation, and he turned against it because it was about the people. He's about people.
Right.
So when you have a political agenda where you just brand an entire demographic of people as the enemy, and then there's a comic book character that resembles you, yeah, I guess you are the enemy. Okay, Captain America hates you, but he always has hated you. That's what he was fighting in World War II when he was punching Hitler in the face, because they brought that up.
They brought that up. Can he just go back to punching Hitler in the face? Well, it's Red Skull, you stupid pieces of crap.
No, he punched Hitler in the face, too.
Yeah, Hitler was never the focus of the Captain America thing. It was always Red Skull.
He was really early on. Way back. It was most of the Hitler stuff was pre-Marvel.
Okay.
He was during the war and post-war, he was a big part of all of that.
Sure.
He was propaganda. You know, it was,
we're
going to fight the bad guys. But here's the thing. What did Hitler do? He chose a certain demographic of people and made them the enemy. And so, therefore, he became Captain America's enemy. I mean, part of the whole thing. So, we have, you know, this character in the new comic that is doing the same thing. He's choosing a demographic of people and making them the enemy. And so, he's Captain America's enemy. And in real life, it would be the same thing. I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't want to get too much into the politics and everything. Clearly, we're not a political show. But the thing is, like, there's got to be a modicum of, like, respect for fellow human beings and common sense and logic applied. You can have a conservative political stance and outlook and worldview and still temper it with all that kind of stuff and realize that the other side is possible too. You know, you can be liberal and, you know, apply all those same things. So yeah, characters that are just like, hey, you guys are the enemy. You are the enemy. Yes. You who just like are a hate monger, you will become the target of a hero's, you know, goals. Like, he's going to get rid of you. And rightfully so. Those are the heroes that I want to read. Like, I don't want to read a comic book where Captain America is that guy saying, hey, let's get the illegals out of America. That doesn't resonate to me. Especially not when we're talking about the modern age of comics where we have incredibly diverse, you know, well-represented scope in the characters and the stories. You know, Sam Wilson, an African American as Captain America, is not going to be down with you hating brown people. And I'm using that term, not, I would never use that term. You know, I'm using what that kind of character would use. I want to make that clear. He wouldn't go for that. He's going to freak out about that. Fox and Friends, you're right. We hate you. I mean, Captain America hates you. But us too.
But for completely different reasons than the reasons you think.
You can disagree with me. I mean, I've established a history, and if you don't know my history, I mean, it's out there. Success Freaks is out there. If you can find Bear Calling stuff, I've established a history of disagreement is awesome because it makes for conversation. Mm-hmm. But when you're just that closed-minded, making things up, uber-focused people, they took two quotes out of a book that rightfully probably has thousands of words in it. I mean, just a 18-page comic probably would have a couple hundred quotes in it. They took a few scenes out of it, out of one comic book, which comics are in arcs. They're not standalone. And they uber focused on that moment. It just killed me. But the statement was made, keep your politics out of comic books. One, you're really bringing it in and making it an
issue.
You're
the ones who are forcing this into the comic books, right? And number, forcing it to look like it's from the comics.
Right. And at least since the 90s, I saw some of it in the 70s comics I've been reading, but definitely in the 90s, there's a bigger awareness. And more real life issues started to play into comic books. To now, there are gay issues. There are rights issues. There's all kind of things that play in it. Gives it more of a relatability to it because Fox and Friends happen to be all white people sitting on that panel, by the way. Not every, and I'm a white guy. Not everybody in this world is white. And not everybody comes from a land of privilege. Just being America itself.
It's actually an overwhelming percentage of them are not white and are not so born into.
True marketing and true storytelling will incorporate as much of a global experience that people can relate to overall. And maybe, just maybe, in that experience, we'll learn to see each other as more like human beings and less like couch douchebags.
Right. Good. All right.
I can't believe we had them on our show. Now, okay, here, I do want to tackle this. We've carried this story for a minute, but I think this is going to give a flip side to that. So we're definitely anti-Fox and Friends and how they handled that. There is an article about Ghost in the Shell. Ghost in the Shell is a great, and honestly, I don't remember which country originated, so I'm just going to use the word Asian. Is it Japan?
It's Japanese.
Okay, yeah, Japanese. Japanese. Well, there's some great stuff out of Korea. There's some great stuff out of China, so I didn't want to infer one of those. So Japanese. A great Japanese. I experienced it in movie form. Is where I saw it. I think there might be.
There's been a couple films, and then there's been a few. Well, there's manga. There's been a few films, and then there's been a few different television shows too.
So they have. The DreamWorks is making a movie, a brand new movie out of it. I can't tell if this is live action or if this is animated, but I just lost her name. She's right. Scarlett Johansson has been cast as the lead character. And there's a couple of petitions, I'm sure, but there's a petition out there to get this recast because only, according to this, one recent survey found that in 2013, Asian characters made up only 4.4% of speaking roles in top grossing Hollywood films. This is a very strong Asian movie. I understand why there is some lashback on the fact that it's a white girl playing an Asian character. However, I think you're kind of wasting your energy with a petition because I agree. And I agree. There's so many strong Asian females that could have been cast in that role. Why'd you cast her? Well, we know why you cast her. She's Black Widow in Marvel. She's going to bring people to the box.
But is it an Asian character? Because that's a thing. Like,
I don't know. That's a good thing.
My experience with Ghost in the Shell is that it represents a potential future, you know, far in the future. Technology has evolved to an incredible degree where we have a much more integrated and diverse society where it's not quite, it kind of like the whole the Firefly thing. You know, when they made Firefly, they wanted to have the people speak English and Chinese and have all these different things come in together. And you know, so when I watch those films, like sometimes, like anime is tricky, but a lot of times they make it very clear when they're trying to make somebody look Japanese or Asian, and then when they're trying to make somebody look Caucasian. Okay. And a lot of the characters in that film were clearly Caucasian. Like the original film Ghost in the Shell, the male main character that's involved, I don't know if you'd call him the main character, but he's in most of it. He is clearly of some kind of white guy, you know, because he's got white hair, he's got a big build, he's tall, you know what I mean? Like, he's got, like, a very Western look. Everything about him is Western. So they're representing the society where there's a mix and where, like, maybe racial and national boundaries aren't quite so clear anymore. So to get upset because just because this is a story that originates in Asia, particularly in Japan and the anime and manga industry, is kind of ridiculous because we don't even know what's going on yet. We don't know who the characters are. We don't know the plot. I mean, if they try to pass her off as an Asian person,
and we were right there boycotting to go, this is bad.
Well, then that would be a discredit. You know what I mean? Because there are people out there who could represent that demographic and who belong to that demographic, and they do a great job. So, yeah, it kind of goes back to like what we talked about with the casting possibilities for Spider-Man in the past. If you're not a fan of our other show From the Helicarrier, we used to talk about a lot of this stuff at the tail end of that show, and we've talked about this in the past in regards to casting for Spider-Man. You know, when we were talking about the possibility of Miles Morales and like who would you cast and this and that, the whole thing we just talked about Captain America is a black guy now. It's okay to change these things up and, you know, break a preconceived concept that we had before and insert, you know, new possibilities and everything. It's just like, yeah, if they hire a bunch of white people to play Asians and they're trying to sell it as like, you know, Neo Tokyo or something, and there's not a single Asian in sight, I'm with you guys. All right, you get my vote. Yes, this is messed up. But if they're trying to, you know, represent a multicultural society, then I'm fine. Like, I mean, you know, it's the whole thing.
And looking at the Huffington Post article, there's a quote here from the petition author, Julie Rodriguez, who says, "It's a self-defeating cycle. Hollywood insists viewers won't be drawn to unknown minority actors, but they're never given the chance to break out of a narrow set of background roles to prove themselves," which I slightly disagree with, but I get what she's saying. "Ghost in the Shell could have been a perfect opportunity to buck this trend, but instead promising actresses are being passed over." I think more and more in TV, promising actresses are getting better chances than in movies. The problem with movies is, especially on this level, they cost so much money. They'd be afraid to cast promising white actresses. I mean, Scarlett Johansson got it because she's done action films over and over again, and she's proven to make her money in the box office. Is that right or wrong? It's money. That's what I can tell you. Now, I agree that there needs to be more chances taken on other actors and actresses, unknowns, knowns.
Sure. I mean, look,
whatever.
The cast of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Yes. I mean, there were some great action sequences there with Japanese actresses who are not known commodities in America, but still did a great job.
Ooh, and, right. We're going to have the rare occasion where I correct you. They were Chinese.
I'm sorry, Chinese. You're right. But look at Keanu Reeves, right? They cast him for 47 Ronin a few years ago, which was supposed to be, you know, a role that should have been filled by a Japanese or Chinese. I think Japanese. Yeah, that'd be Chushin-Gura. So that'd be Japanese Ronin. And they did it because, you know, they wanted to sell tickets. They wanted to make sure that they had a known commodity in the box office called race bending. And
he stuck out like a sore thumb. I mean, I'm one of the few people in this world who likes Keanu Reeves, apparently. I do like him, but I watched this movie like, this was bad. This is a bad casting choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, did they do the same thing with Valkyrie and Tom Cruise? Like,
Tom Cruise. Well, Tom Cruise could play a Nazi.
He can play German, I guess. It's not
Germany was white and blonde haired, blue eyed was their ideal. Even though Hitler had brown, black
Tom
hair.
Cruise. But Tom Cruise does look Aryan, doesn't he? little bit of Tom Cruise master race going on there. Yeah.
But there have definitely been those roles with the race bending. Well,
Tom Cruise is a good example of somebody that has defied the traditional template for a successful movie actor. He's short. I mean, he's a good-looking guy.
He's really
short. Mm-hmm. And he's in tremendous physical shape, and he's done all kinds of awesome action films over the years, but he is short. And it has created challenges in casting when they cast people with him, because they have to, you know, they have to do all these tricks and everything to make him seem to be a similar height to everybody else and stuff like that. So, but it's not impossible, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, but you're right. Movies, I mean, you talk about most of these big blockbuster films, I mean, the really big action films have budgets of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an almost inconceivable amount of money for the average person. You know what I mean? You just can't wrap your head around how much that actually is. You know what I mean? And if they fail, that money's just gone.
Yeah.
You know, so there's always this huge gamble when they make a big budget action film, that we got to get it back. So they're going to choose big names for big budget action films, because if they don't, they're just going to hemorrhage money. And you mentioned 47 Ronin. That's a perfect example. That film did terrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I'm sure that film did not make its money back. That film was kind of a flawed concept anyways, because it's a really great story. Like, it's a great Japanese story. And it could have been done really well, but they tried to Americanize it or Westernize it.
Yeah.
Right. And they kind of ruined it. And they also had mystical elements in it and stuff, like, cause there was like some magic type stuff in it. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, what kind of movie are you making, kind of thing? You know, like, they didn't really sell it what the concept was, but it's, yeah, you gotta, there are people out there. There are definitely people out there who should be cast in some of these films and given opportunities, but you also don't want the exploitation of them. Like, think of the movies that Jackie Chan made when he was hot. Mm-hmm. You know, like, some of those movies were pretty bad. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, some of them were great, but then they'd be like, oh, let's make a Jackie Chan action film.
Right. And, like, Big Trouble and not Big Trouble in China, but Rumble in the Bronx. Super Cop, all those. Mm-hmm. Cheesy, but perfect. Like, you know, basically the Americanized version of the things he was doing. Already in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With and golden then, films. Yeah.
Then they started capitalizing. Oh, wait, he's Chinese. We could play off of that and paired him up with Owen Wilson, and paired him up with Chris Tucker, mm-hmm. where the big joke is that you can't understand the words coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, the Shanghai movies actually were fun, but
they were fun. But
right, they're around the premise of the fact that he's a fish out of water, and it could have been handled a little bit
better. It's very two-dimensional in both cases.
Yeah, I don't think the Rush Hour films or the Shanghai films would have flown today.
Probably not. Well, we'll find out. I think they're trying to make a Shanghai 3.
Are they?
I think it's either Rush Hour 3 or Shanghai 3. I forget. It's one of the two. And so we'll see if that even gets past, you know, pre-production.
I hope it's Rush Hour 3 so Brett Ratner stays far, far away from any comic-related films.
Keep him busy.
See, I loved the first Rush Hour because I essentially didn't know better. The second one, I was like, oh, this is bad, man. And then after that, he went back to his roots of making actual...
I've said it before. They're good. They're popcorn and beer movies. You know, we're going to throw this on.
The second one was so weak, though. Yeah. I mean, it was just capitalization on a name is what that was.
Right. Well, as many sequels are. But, yeah, the whole gist was, like, these are just dumb fun movies. You know, like, the plot is loose and thin. You know, like, you could punch a hole in it so easily. But you sit there, you maybe have a beer, have some popcorn, whatever. You have a good time and enjoy it. There's room in the marketplace for films like that, but I think nowadays the demand is really for, like, what we're seeing out of MCU, what we hope to see out of Star Wars, where people want their action films to have some comedy in them, but to be really, like, crisp and put together and very high production quality. And then they want their comedies to be insanely, like, just balls to the wall, we're telling jokes the whole time.
Yeah.
So, but go ahead.
Right now, I was going to say, I really wanted to tackle that because you can see that we support diversity. We support equality, humanism, you know, being human. And I want to read this last quote from the article. This is from the studio, I believe. That's not from DreamWorks, but I'm not sure where it came from. It says, ultimately, Ghost in the Shell is a story about what makes us human. Having access to powerful media representation is key for minorities to be seen as human. As a successful white actress, Scarlett Johansson has been privileged to play powerful women and characters in action films. Ghost in the Shell was a chance for an actress of Asian descent to have the same opportunity. Yes, but you're also missing the point of the first part of your quote, where ultimately this story, as Klotz pointed out earlier, is about what makes us human. It's our diversity. So if she's not surrounded, if it's like, I think we've all said it, if it's all non-Asian, this is going to be horrible. If they try to pass her off as Asian, this is going to be horrible. But if it's really about the heart of it, which what makes us human, there needs to be a diversity and it'll be fine. But we definitely support true diversity and not forced faked diversity. And we have one more story that we want to hit before we get out of here, because back to happy, happy, joy, joy time. There's some awesome secret stuff going on in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, so, and I think we touched a little bit on this last week. I'm trying to remember if we brushed against this, but...
we did.
In the second episode of this season's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there is a nod. I want to say we talked about all this. Didn't we read this article?
We might have. It may have just been carried over.
I think we didn't. We just didn't clear out the thing saying save it for episode 5, but... you know, Mike,
let's just
if
say
we've,
it's getting really good.
It is getting really good, yeah.
Even exactly. though they're playing the hand stuff way too much. They're overplaying their hand.
Oh, see, I don't think it's as egregious as you're making it sound. It feels like they may have done it twice in your
I get to horrible pun it up though. That's the fun part.
Yes. But if Mike Mike, if we've talked about this on the previous episode, just edit all this stuff out. If not, keep it in. Go listen to Warts and All. You know, it's nothing wrong with that.
But it was in the conversation with Blair Underwood. That he says, I know you're putting again this band of secret warriors together. Nice. Caterpillar, you know, Project Caterpillar at the end of last season on the folder. That was a great homage.
Little hint, nice little Easter egg. Yeah, and since Quake is a member of the Secret Warriors in Marvel, it all makes sense. So it does tie in with comics continuity. So it'll be cool to see how far they go with this. If we get more than just is Lincoln, right? Is the other truly superpowered person, not just really good at agility and well trained kind of thing.
Yes, right now. Mm-hmm. And he's actually not joining their team. He's just kind of accepting their sanctuary.
Not yet.
You know it will. Of course. Now, my question is, what are they doing with Obelisk, and where is this story going to go?
With the Obelisk?
Yeah, so Simmons, yeah. Right? She got swallowed up.
Right.
So Fitz, being the true superhero that he is, right, dives in, rescues her, which they... overextended that scene a little bit, but he rescues her out of it. Great, great showing off of Quake's powers and what can happen and the comic science behind things. I loved how they played that whole episode. But she's got something going on with her, right? She's oversensitive to lights and sounds, and it's almost like something psychologically hunting her.
Well, and
still,
at the very end, she says, "I want to go back, or she needs to go back.
I have to go back. What is that?
It's an homage to Lost. Now, correct
Dude,
me if
you
I'm wrong,
just
but
made
the...
me so scared.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the obelisk was destroyed.
It was, yes.
So there's nothing more they can do with that obelisk.
Well,
but,
yeah, but okay, so well, the world that was she was transported to, I want to know what's going on there. I want to know what happened in those 3 months.
We are going back there where there's going to be a special operation or a covert operation that goes to that planet, and we find out more about that.
Simmons had fragments of the shattered obelisk in her hands when she said the line about having to go back. Now, here's the thing, because we're talking about the exact scene that I have a huge concern over. Mm-hmm. I am going to be so insanely butthurt if she has to go back because of some love triangle bullshit. And I say that because she's being a little bit weird with Fitz, but not completely weird. And it seems like we're finally getting what we've wanted for, you know, since the first episode of the show, where, like, you know, we know they care about each other and they can at least try to figure out what that means. If her desperation to go back is related to a dude,
well,
and I will be super.
Here's why that won't happen, because this show is on ABC and not on the CW.
Well, there's that.
Fair enough. I mean, but it could happen.
I can see, because we know that other people have gone through, right? They showed the thing from presumably the 1800s where the guy basically got shoved in the door and they locked it behind him. Mm-hmm. And my wife had some good theories until the show played out. But during the show, she's like, oh, what if time works differently? Will we see this guy on that planet? Those kind of things. Now, I can see she's been there for 3 months. Mm-hmm. I can see her wanting to go back to save somebody who helped her. Not necessarily a love triangle, but... You know, at Foxholes, man, you do things, supposedly, you know, things change. Things are different. So she could have had a crisis relationship, as it were, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Tarzan style, I guess. I don't know.
it could also be something where, like, maybe the Kree, I assume it's Kree on the other side, maybe the Kree on the other side have like slaves or something, and they're actually like derived from the people who've been sent back through the obelisk over the years,
right?
You know, some crazy thing like that where she's like, well, we got to go back to right the wrong kind of thing. that would be interesting, you know what I mean? Or I mean, and it could go deeper than that, because I had two big fears out of her return, because I didn't expect her to come back so soon.
Right.
I really felt like I thought we were going to come up empty at the end of that episode, and we didn't.
It's going to be a carry through the season kind of thing.
Well, they did say that we'd find out pretty quickly what happened to her, but I thought that meant we found out that she was transported somewhere, not that she was rescued. So I was taken aback slightly as well.
The other thing I'm a little worried about, relationship with Skye, because she was played as being very uncomfortable in that heart-to-heart with Skye. And we know that before she went through it, she was starting to get kind of a hardliner on getting rid of the Inhumans, right. You know, like putting them down. So my concern is, like, is she going to be like, you know, kill all the aliens? Mm. Yeah. Mm. Is the other thing, too, because I'm just like, that is not necessarily something I want to see. And because I'd be really disappointed in that. Yeah, but, yeah,
I'm with you. I'm very curious to see where they go. S.H.I.E.L.D. does very little to disappoint. There has been a few disappointing things, but overall...
Well, the first season was pretty rough.
Well, the first season was also run by TV execs and not by Marvel.
Well, and it was really the first half of the first season. True. Once Winter Soldier came out and they could kind of
tie
the things that they'd been setting up that whole time to the plot points that happened in that movie, that's when things picked up and it really found its legs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
Big shout out to our returning Asgardian. Right? I never know the actor's
Peter
name.
McNichol? Yeah,
but love him. And as soon as I saw him, I was like, thank you, Marvel. Perfect casting choice. He plays, in my opinion, every role he plays so well. And this engaged Asgardian who didn't really care for humans, he just was here because that, I thought he played it so well. That was great.
Well, I think he does care for some humans, because I recall him being a bit of a womanizer.
Well, okay.
So,
but he's not Thor. I mean, Thor is like, this is my world. And he's just like,
right.
I don't really care about your problems.
Well, he's a party animal. I mean, that's really how he's been kind of portrayed at that. And he's a bit of a party animal. And then he's got that, like, studious side, too, you know? So,
yeah. Curiosity. And
yeah.
Yeah.
He did a great job. It was great to see him again. It'd be really cool if they had him pop in and out from time to time more often. That would be cool. I'm really wondering if this season's going to culminate in some kind of expedition through to that world, and where they're going to put together, you know, this team of secret warriors and then go to that place.
This also, because we know this underlying it has to, is tying into the Inhumans movie because of the Inhumans storylines. We know that's going to play. This also could lead up to Captain Marvel a little bit with her gun power.
Yeah, because the Kree, right? The whole Kree connection
there. Into that, yeah.
Captain Marvel got pushed back, though, so keep that in mind.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So I don't know. We're curious. We're happy.
It's a wicked web at this point, and it's really hard to tell what direction they're going in at any given time. So there is that.
So, Brian, what are you watching or reading or playing?
I have been continuing to read the Star-Lord series. It's going slow because I've been tied up with a lot of freelance lately. But Star-Lord still continue to be good, and the whole connection there with Kitty Pryde is really, really cool. TV-wise, I've taken Heroes Reborn off my DVR list.
What?
It's just been disappointing, and it's for me been veering into that same thing that I thought killed it in season two. Now I'm hoping that, you know, people come back and say, oh no, it's turned around, it's really good, and you're smoking crack and need to get back in and watch it again. So,
well, I'll stay on it and let you I'll keep you up to date.
Keep an eye on that for me.
I haven't even started, so keep me posted.
There you go.
Well, the first three episodes were excellent. The first episode is two-parter, right?
The first episode's really good. Yeah, I did enjoy the first episode, and
and then the second episode, well, it's
lost its momentum for me in the second and third episode. Still enjoying The Flash, still enjoying Arrow, getting ready to get back into iZombie, which has been back for a few weeks. We're going to binge watch that when my wife gets back from trip. it's a lot of the same stuff that I've been watching and enjoying lately, just more of it. Haven't really added anything new to the repertoire, but we'll see.
Ross, what you got?
I'm watching a lot of the same stuff, watching all the comic stuff. My roommate and I, we also watch a lot of the comedies. Like, we watch Modern Family, Fresh Off the Boat, Blackish, stuff like that.
Oh, if you haven't seen Life in Pieces, by the way, it is fantastic.
Is it? Okay.
I think it's every bit as good as Modern Family.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Yeah, yeah, I like those as a little bit of a palate cleanser between some of the real heavy stuff that happens in some of the comic films. I think Flash right now, or not films, I mean shows, Flash right now is primed to be so cool. Like, last week's episode, without giving too much away, had another version of Flash that rocked like the classic Flash costume, which I thought was really awesome. And it seems like they're building up to, because the Singularity opened up portals and stuff, so there's a lot of crossover, and so it's going to be really cool. There was a big reveal of a certain character, which I was excited to see again. That might be a little bit of a spoiler for some people if they can put that together, but maybe not. Other than that, I've been playing some games. Minecraft, a group of us have been playing Minecraft Feed the Beast mod pack, Feed the Beast Infinity. Been having a lot of fun with that. PlanetSide 2 a little bit, because I really need to get my war on. And PlanetSide 2, like, if you want to play a sci-fi war game, PlanetSide 2 is hands down the best experience out there, and it's free to play. So it really feels like pitched battles, and like, you know, there's tanks and you know, airplanes, and it, like, there's big gunships and all that kind of stuff. It's crazy. It's a great game. So if you want to give it a try, give it a spin. I'm playing on US East Emerald, so if you want to hit me up, my name's Mortal Sword on there. You can find me. I'm playing Terran Republic, so shoot me a message or something. I also just resubscribed to Star Wars The Old Republic, which is a phrase that I did not think would leave my lips. I don't know if I've ever talked about it on any of our shows, but I was sorely disappointed when the game originally launched. I ended up playing the light side. I got to max level, and there was really no end game support. And my big frustration at the time was I hated the storyline for my class. I happened to play the Jedi Shadow, which had the consular story, which was really weak. It was a very rinse and repeat storyline, because otherwise every other class in the game, in the original launch of the game, had an amazing story. They had lots of different options. I mean, the voice work and everything. I've said for a long time now, it's a great Knights of the Old Republic game. It's not a great MMO. Mm-hmm.
Good description.
They just launched today a huge overhaul patch that had a huge mechanics change to, like, almost everything. Crafting's changed, combat, classes, stats, everything. As well as the beginning of early access for their new expansion, which comes out on the 27th, which is pretty cool looking, which will raise the level cap to, I think it's 60 or 65 now, I can't remember exactly, and it'll have a whole slew of new content and everything. So I jumped in last minute, got in because my roommate's been playing it and some of my other friends have been playing it, and I figured I'm not going to try to play it as an MMO so much as I'm going to try to play it as a really good RPG that has good story, and then I will sometimes go play multiplayer stuff with friends or maybe some randoms, as opposed to trying to make it be like a WoW replacement or something like that, because it certainly is not.
Have they scaled down the number of servers they have so that it doesn't feel as desolate on there?
Yes, they condensed. They have way less servers now. There's only, like, there's probably a dozen, maybe total, maybe 10, something like that. They just did some major stuff to the legacy thing, so that like if you unlock Datacrons and if you unlock achievements, they are account wide now, stuff like that. They did a pretty sweeping pass where they tweaked a lot of stuff. For better or worse, we don't entirely know yet, but I figured I'd give it a crack again. I've been very resistant to that concept for a long time. I really thought I would never log into the game again, but I'm giving it a swing, and I'm playing a Sith Juggernaut, which is a Jedi, well, Sith tank class. So we'll see how that goes. Maybe I'll still be playing in a week. Maybe I won't.
Cool.
I just kind of got a picture of your character charging head first with his head down, but some force bolts going out in front of him.
You're not half wrong.
Well, I am all caught up from the last recording to this one. I am all caught up on Arrow Season 3.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a real big binge. But I loved the take on it. I love the League of Assassins and the fact that somebody finally treated Ra's al Ghul to some screen time. Or Ra's, you know, depending on how you Ra's saying it. I always said Ra's al Ghul, and they pronounce it Ra's on the show. And
well, no, they pronounce it both ways. There's characters who pronounce it Ra's, and there's other ones who pronounce it Ra's al Ghul. So
yeah, it's one of those things I don't know. But I loved it, so now I took a break for the last couple of days. I was doing at least 4 episodes a day. So I took a little break, but I'm ready to get into this season of Arrow. So happy to be caught up. Flash, of course. I gave Minority Report a 1-episode run, and right now it was. I'm gonna give it a 2nd episode, but I gotta tell you, it's a little empty. It's a little all about the tech and the graphics going
on. Here's what I'm gonna tell you to do. Don't bother continuing, only for the reason that it hasn't been picked up and confirmed. So
you
could end up watching something that's just not gonna ever.
Well, from the first episode. They got, it's not a comic property per se, but they got the comic parts down if they want to sell this to teenage boys.
Because
they totally centered on because boobs.
I'm just saying. Wait, what was this again? I
Minority Report. It was so blatant that my wife and I actually had a discussion about it because we noticed things or whatever. But it was so blatantly, there was one particular scene coming out of a commercial break where they practically start on the main actress's chest and then pan out.
Yes.
And like, come on. I mean, she looks great, yes, but she's actually smart. She seems to be a pretty good actress. Give her something to work with besides a whole lot of graphics are running around her, you know, special effects, all that jazz. So it was a little disappointing. I'm so stoked Supernatural's back. I'm such a fangirl for that show. It's not even funny. And even though I don't typically spend money, I do want to support this right now because I think our audience would love it. On HumbleBumble.com, Humble, H-U-M-B-L-E, Bundle, because not everybody is as up-to-date as Ellie and Klotz are on how the... They're the ones who told me about this, is all I'm saying. So, HumbleBundle.com, Capcom Bundle, going on for another week and a half, it looks like. So, you may have missed this. Okay, you may have missed this by the time this airs, but it's something to bookmark because every once in a while they did a Borderlands one a couple of months ago. Just to give you an idea of what you may have missed, the Capcom bundle has Strider, Resident Evil Revelations 2, Episode 1, Lost Planet 3, Bionic Commando Rearmed for $1 or more. And if you pay $15 or more, you'll get Resident Evil 5 Untold Stories bundle download content and Ultra Street Fighter 4. They pay more than $8, and they'll add in Resident Evil Revelations, which is a great Resident Evil game, in my opinion. Devil May Cry, the new reboot, the DMC Devil May Cry. Resident Evil number 5, Resident Evil number 4, which is heralded as the best Resident Evil ever, typically. And Remember Me. So that's a whole lot of Capcom awesomeness for $16, give or take, total. Yep.
I have been a big fan of Humble Bundle almost since they got started. Now, I haven't bought every bundle that's come out. Sometimes I already have the games that I'm that I would be interested. They're already in the bundle, or sometimes it's just stuff that I don't really care for. But they frequently bookmark it, as McFall said, because they frequently have all kinds of different bundles. They have ebook bundles. They have music bundles. They have all types of video game bundles. Sometimes you get a bunch of AAA stuff. Sometimes they do indie bundles, which are awesome. They do Android bundles where you can get a bunch of Android games. And the best part is almost every computer game that I've ever gotten through Humble Bundle has come with a Steam code as well as a direct download option. Or, you know, the same thing for Origins, whichever, you know, platform it happens to run off of. So you can register it with the major platforms and have it there forever. And you can also just download it straight up most of the time. So, and it's is as cheap or as expensive as you want it to be generally. They often do the tiered thing where if you pay more than the average, you get the bigger bundle. And in this case, it's if you pay more than 15, you get everything. I've gotten some games at a steal on here. Sometimes I'll just throw a buck or two in because it's all I can swing at the time. And I get a couple of things that I might mess with. I have so many games. I have almost 300 games in my Steam library, and a huge chunk of that is because of Humble Bundle just throwing me a bunch of titles that I don't know if I'll ever get to. I'll probably die before I play all those games. I'm just throwing that out there. I mean, I'm gonna be like 60 years old, and just like, oh man, there's still like 50 games left. So, yeah.
My only and it's a small complaint, but my only complaint is the way my life is styled right now, I don't set up my PC other than to work. So The fact that these are all awesome Steam games, unless I go and buy a Steam machine for my living room, I probably won't ever play them. And because this Capcom bundle has really got my attention. There's a lot of games I haven't played in a while or I've never played. Mm-hmm. And these are some of their better games. So
the other thing we should mention, though, is that you can adjust... it's because it's considered a donation, and those donations go to charities. And in this case, this one goes to Direct Relief and Games Aid. You can adjust the percentage of the money that you've paid to who you want it to go to. So if you want X amount to go to the developers, if you want X amount to go to Humble Bundle, and X amount to go to charity, you can do that. And they're sliding scales, so you can do it in any configuration you want, really, almost all the time. I've only seen a handful of times where they've like X amount has to go to this source because they have to cover the bills, basically, kind of thing. But yeah, for the most part, you can completely control where your money's going to end up, which is awesome. You are buying something and directly contributing to a good cause, and that is amazing.
That's cool. Ibit, any last words?
Nothing from me.
Me either. Cough.
Nope, I'm good.
All right, well, you know, we are part of the Giant Size Team Up Network. I can say the name right. I just get the initials wrong. So it's Giant Size Team Up Network. You can check that out over at giantsizeteamup.com. And we are on blogtalkradio.com/breakingthepanel. We do have our email. Is it? I think it's btp@giantsizeteamup.com.
That is correct, yes.
Cool. So you can email us your thoughts on TVs, movies, games. We want to cover everything that is comic-based with passion, with honesty, with integrity, and all above all, having some fun while we do it. So tune in. We're going to release these shows every 2 weeks, and the opposite weeks we'll get panel by panel. So go on over to GiantSizeTeamUp.com and find out everything you need there. I guess that's it. I don't know how to end this show.
Oh, this show just
wow, wow.
Until next time, we'll see you on Breaking the Panel.
There you go.